Congratulations! You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
On the line, coming to us live from the capital of Aotearoa, which is Pōneke, Wellington. We have Michaela Tempers on the line, ready to have a korero about their new EP, Good Woman, which is out now, wherever you find your tunes. Good morning to you, Michaela. How are we doing?
Morena, I'm really good. How are you?
I'm pretty chill, man. I'm very chill. My brother from Melbourne is over in the country right now. He's over in Otipoti where we are. So it's
nice.
Great to have some more fam around the place, which is real sweet. Yeah.
Yeah. Melbourne's a great place too. That's where I lived there for a little bit.
True. How'd you find it?
Yeah, loved it. Loved it. My husband's actually from Melbourne. So, yeah, we go back quite often. And we miss it. We miss the food, I have to say.
And the paychecks, I imagine.
Yes.
The food in Melbourne, though, is absolutely stellar. So much good food, like Vietnamese. Yep.
Greek,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's nuts. It's actually nuts. We're going to be talking about this new EP, Good Woman. But before we do, I want to talk about some of your Substack articles, which I guess are connected to the new EP and just you being an artist as a whole. In September, you published a Substack article about social media, its many foibles, and that you were feeling quite a lot of anxiety and excitement going into releasing this new EP, and you had a lot of anxiety about making all this music. Has that anxiety sort of subsided with the release of it?
It's funny, a lot of artists talk about release day and it being really underwhelming because there's a huge build-up, and then the day just passes and you're like, wow, this thing that I have been working on for years is just out in the ether. And maybe like a few people share it or comment, but then it's done. And then you just sort of go about your day today. I was totally anticipating this. And I think because I've been releasing singles for like a year now, I think I was expecting this, but I am always anxious about putting stuff out there. Yep, always. I don't quite know how to tackle it, to be honest, except just go through it.
And the more you do it, the less you'll feel anxious, hopefully.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I imagine.
I have to say. Yeah. It just becomes easy with time. Or you just become a bit desensitized to what people think of you. You're just like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to do this. Yeah.
Completely. The article in question that I mentioned before is concerned with your struggle to use social media to promote yourself, the sort of internal struggle you have about using social media as a tool, the issues of algorithmic advertising, and sort of adding to the self-promo content heap of the internet. How do you stay sane when there's this contradiction of needing to exacerbate and be very self-centric, and then also this horrible rejection of what the system does and how it exploits people?
I think I'm still working it out. I think more and more I'm caring less, but I think when the less you care sometimes, then you don't put an effort, and then it's a bit of a catch-22, because if you're not putting an effort and you're not making strategies or social media plans, then you're also not progressing. And it's just, I know most musicians struggle, and I definitely struggle. It feels almost like perceived narcissism to be like, hey, listen to me, I'm cool, this is what I look like, this is what I sound like, when also it brings me the most immense amount of joy. I it's just a fine line, I think, because if you want to be heard and if you want to share, you've just got to do it.
For sure. I think it's interesting that people get quite worried about someone rejecting your art, because I don't know, if when I think of that situation, I think of oh my god, what's the guy from Velvet Underground, Lou Reed. He had a massive infamous beef with this American rock critic called Robert Christgau, to the point where at a live album Lou Reed like was shitting on his name. I think that it's not a personal attack, it's more of a discourse, and it's, you know, that's what I always think about criticism as being.
Yeah, and I think you just have to, I try to just sit back and think, oh, if people like it, they like it, and if they don't, they don't, and that's fine. I have artists that I love, and then there's artists that I don't listen to and I don't love, but that doesn't it's not a personal rejection, mm-hmm. and everyone just has different tastes and different styles. So you just have to, yeah, I just have to recognize that. And I wish I didn't care so much. I wish I could be really cool and nonchalant and be like, oh yeah, I don't care, whatever, but I do.
Yeah. Yeah, because
yeah,
you made it.
Yeah.
It's funny how we separate the art from, some people separate the art from the artist when it's you know, bad people making good music or good people making bad music.
Yes.
if you make bad music but you're a good person, people will not tell you to your face.
No, that's so true.
I found a really interesting part of that Substack article I mentioned earlier. You said it's great that music is more accessible and that the age of gatekeepers isn't what it once was.
Yeah.
Gatekeepers at their best now have sort of become like internet music curators, or at their worst, they've become a bit sellouty. Rolling Stone sort of plastering their website with Taylor Swift promotion and giving her a new album, A Perfect 10, kind of comes to mind about that. What would an ideal gatekeeper or music industry or music audience relationship look like to you?
That's a hard one. I think I know a lot of my friends are pulling back, for example, from Spotify, and I guess there's a lot of places now, you know, I mean, Bandcamp's something that comes to mind, is that that's a place that's people can just put their music. I don't know, the landscape is consistently changing. It's just consistently changing, and so I personally find it really, really hard to just keep up with algorithms, what's happening. In the perfect world, honestly, I don't even know how to answer that question, because I'm just so grateful that independent artists like myself, I can share my music. And I always put it back to, what does success look like? So I often think that if I had, I don't know, 20,000, 30,000 more followers, would that actually make me feel better about myself and my music? And I always scale it back to, no, it wouldn't make me feel better. Like, I'm proud of what I've done. I'm grateful for the people that listen. And I'll do my best in trying to promote myself. But at the end of the day, yeah, I just have to always come back to that core of, it's good, and I'm happy with it. And I don't think that answered your question, but...
No, I think that's a good... opinion to have. I think if you are just chasing numbers, there's always going to be a bigger number and you're always going to be a bit empty inside. You know?
Yes, exactly. And I'm like, that's not how I started this. I started this because I felt like there was a gaping hole inside me that I wanted to fill. And yeah, I was at a dinner party recently where, I don't know, we went around, someone asked a question about what would you do if you had all the money in the world and you didn't have to work? And I work a full-time job while doing music and writing on the side. And I said, oh, I'd still be doing the same thing. I'd be doing my music and my writing. And that sort of, I don't know, I felt like a little bit warm and fuzzy inside, because even though it's stressful and I don't, you know, I'm working to sort of pay my way and my bills, I sort of felt grateful that I'm doing it and that I'm living how, like, really authentically and how I want to live. And whether or not people listen to it or read it actually doesn't matter. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's always my tension.
It is. There's another article I read through which was very honest and vulnerable, and it was an essay about growing up and eventually leaving Mormonism and some of the trauma that it kind of imparts on you. And in that article you mentioned researching nihilism, and you come across Friedrich Nietzsche and you drop his quote, "Become what you are." And I want to know, how is this EP helping you become what you are?
I had this brings to mind, I was doing another interview recently where the interviewer asked about the new single, Nothing to Lose. And at the very end, he said, well, the final lyric of that song is, "Now that I'm older, I say it like it is." And he said, "Oh, I think that sounds like it's the core of your EP." I had never thought about that, but I've been thinking about it ever since, because, the whole EP has been about looking back at my younger self who has been trapped or in pain, or maybe perhaps enslaved by these boundaries of womanhood. So much of it is caused by this Orthodox religion that I was raised in. And I don't love to talk about it negatively, because it also gave me a lot, but it also, there was so much that I've had to untether myself from. And so, yeah, this EP has 6 tracks that were written literally over, I would say, about 7 years. each documenting some sort of pain point. And when I go back through it all, I realize there's always a point of pain or trapping that I write about, and then also a sense of empowerment.
Yeah, I noticed that throughout the whole thing.
Yeah. So
every song is sort of bittersweet in that way.
Yes. And I do think that in terms of the Nietzsche quote, become what you are, I do feel like, yeah, I'm living authentically, to use that word again, and it feels good. It feels good. Yeah.
Mean. Actually, you mentioned the track Nothing to Lose before. I really, really picked up on that song for its quite eerie instrumental. And
oh, yes!
It's very eerie. It's kind of spooky, but I love it. And is there a strong theme of being medicated on here? Because there's the line, I cry more than I should, so I take a little pill and float away. Is that sort of on the money?
Yes, I am. It was written, I'm quite an anxious person. I'm an overthinker. I don't know, most people pick that up. I was actually just talking to my husband this morning, like, how do I talk about these songs, which are all so vulnerable, so raw? And in this one, I was reflecting on how, so I'm one of six kids, like big Mormon family. And I was often, I was probably like the most arty of them, the most sensitive, probably the least robust of my siblings. And my mum would always say to me, oh, it's the art in you. You know, you've got to make, it's fodder. Everything you feel, it's fodder for art. Mm. And I went through, during writing the song of Nothing to Lose, I went through another anxious period. I'd lost a job. I just cry all the time. I cry when I'm happy, when I'm sad, when I'm angry. I just cry all the time. Mm. The tears seep out of my eyes. Mm-hmm. And it was the first time I went on antidepressants, which I had a lot of shame around. I'm a millennial. I don't know if it's quite as, I don't know, there's just a lot of shame around medication, not quite so much as there is today. And it was really hard to accept, to go on them. And then they just totally stopped me feeling.
Yeah. That's brutal. It's so nuts.
Yeah. And I kind of liked that, but I was also like, maybe my feelings are valid and they're good. I don't know, it was just, yep. So for sure that song is about self-medication and anxiety and my exploration of nihilism and what's the meaning of life, what's the purpose. Yeah.
And what is the purpose? I mean, who's to say?
Who's to say?
I think that's the conclusion a lot of people have. But on that note of self-medicating, you know, I definitely do feel that you feel quite a lot on this whole album about everything that you talk about. And yeah, as you said before, very, very prone to crying. Do you think that self-medication has helped with sort of moderating those feelings or regulating them?
Yeah, like I have gone off them since, and I think they were a really, really helpful tool to get me through a really hard time. And so I'm really grateful. And I had to really untangle the feelings of shame I felt around medication, and that it's not shameful, and I'm definitely someone who probably has some sort of like chemical thing going on. So I'm grateful for them, but I'm also grateful that I'm in a place in my life where I'm also not on them, and I can feel proud of my emotions, and
wear them as a badge of honor.
Yes, which I think there's a lot of rhetoric now in pop culture where that's happening and that's the case. But yeah, that was my personal experience. And I often feel like I was raised just in a little, like I was raised in a much more traditional way than a lot of my peers. Yeah,
for sure. The last track on the album, The Plane, sends off the album with a very somber acoustic guitar and is concerned with wanting something that feels trivial. And you kind of want that trivial thing because life can be so harsh, as put in your words. And I honestly agree. Small victories, I often feel, are better than big ones. But have you figured out what that trivial thing was?
I think... So this song, it's a pretty,
it's a heavy song.
Yeah, it is. but I think we've touched on it already, but just again, this ambition I have, or this desire to sort of play and write and share, feels to me sometimes trivial in the world. I don't know, I just feel like the world is pulling apart at the seams. I don't know, yeah, that's, I feel like a lot of people feel that way. I know that we're in an era of social media and news and interest media. But I keep coming back to this idea that my music is real and art is a huge vehicle for change. And especially in this era of AI, like going to a show, supporting artists, being an artist, doing your art, actually it feels one of the most real important things that there is. Like, I'm grateful for the art that people produce, and now that I do art and know how hard it is, I'm even extra grateful for people who put themselves out there.
Mm-hmm. Totally agree. I always support people power. I keep seeing all these big music outlets say casually that there's a charting AI artist on the R&B charts in America right now, and they're just saying it's like it's a just a new normal music development, as if that isn't heralding in some kind of horrific, again, huge barrier and obstacle for artists trying to get any modicum of attention.
Yeah,
it's absolutely cooked. But on a nicer note, you've finished this EP. Now that it's out in the world, are you going to revisit that novel that was your master's thesis, or are you going to leave that on the shelf for a little bit more time?
No, it's, that's on the cards. It's just been knocking away in the background, but I've just had no time or energy. I've never been able to do both. Mm-hmm. I've always, although it's been a real joy to settle into my Substack this year. I mean, it's a small publication that I do once a month, but it's brought me so much joy, and I'm 100% that's on the cards. I'm going to settle into, my goal for 2026 is my novel. Yep.
Mean. Awesome.
Yeah.
Novel.
Now that I've said it, I'll do it.
Cool. And will there be a tour on the cards for Good Woman EP?
Yeah, I'm sort of in the weeds there trying to organise a few shows. Yeah, it's hard work, isn't it?
It sure is.
All the music admin. Yep.
Yeah, especially when you're a solo artist and you can't sort of rely on your bandmates to help out. Yeah.
Yeah, I've got, because a couple of my bandmates are moving to New York for music universities, which is like pretty amazing. Mm. So we managed to line up a show. We've got an EP release show here in Wellington next week. I'm actually playing a show, which I haven't announced yet, in Melbourne at the end of the year. And then I'm looking at booking shows in the new year, probably around the country. So, yeah, stay tuned.
Exciting. Watch this space. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on and speaking to me about the new EP. Do you have any final thoughts or words of wisdom you want to leave our audience with?
No words of wisdom. Just gratitude that I have the privilege to do this. Yeah, like really grateful, and grateful to anybody who listens and supports me, but also other artists. Yeah, it means a lot.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that. All right, thank you very much for coming on the program, Michaela.
No worries.
It was great.
Thank you.
Appreciate you. Take care. All right, folks, that was Michaela Tempers. We're talking to Michaela about her new EP, Good Woman, which is out wherever you find your music. We're going to play the track Nothing to Lose, which has a very heavenly outro. Might be my most my most favourite sonic moment on the album and on the EP in terms of instrumentals. After that, we'll have Rad Times Get Guide, and then we'll have the Top 11 Countdown from 9 to 10. Here's Michaela Tempers with Nothing to Lose. You're listening to Radio 1, 91 FM.
More than I do, I am nihilistic lately, just like you. Should I care more than I do?
That was a Radio 191 FM podcast. Find more at r1.co.nz.